Hi, we're the Telephones, and you're listening to We Heart Music Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I proudly present for your listening pleasure, We Heart Music Radio.
This is Mo with We Heart Music Radio, and this is episode 21. And we have Dave on the line.
Hi, Dave.
Hi there, Mo. How's it going?
Good. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what's going on?
I live here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I contribute to We Heart Music's web blog, and I mostly listen to jazz music and anything that comes over the wire. I'm more than happy to listen to.
All right,
that's the story, and I'm sticking with it.
We have a special guest appearance by a band called The Telephones on the line with us from Derby, England, is Jay.
Hello.
Subpoena, please forgive me. I had to put the band in line. They were slack on. Pulling on that wine.
Jay, you play guitar?
Yeah, just about, yeah. I play guitar, lead guitar, rhythm guitar, play a bit of harmonica, sing, well, backing vocals anyway.
Awesome. And then we also have Andy.
Yeah, hello. Yeah, I'm vocalist and acoustic guitar with The Telephones.
Are you guys sharing one mic?
Yeah, we're passing it between us, unfortunately, yeah.
And we also have Gary.
Gary on bass. Not at the moment, obviously.
So I'm going to ask you guys some questions, and feel free to chime in and answer any one of you guys who thinks you have the best answer. The first one is, I wanted to ask about the name The Telephones. Is there another band called The Telephones? It sounds like a very common name for a band.
Oh, there's actually three bands called The Telephones. We've got The Telephones UK, which is us, obviously. Then you've got, it's a band in Japan called The Telephones. And then we've got The Telephones in America. They're actually on our MySpace, if you fancy having a route round on there to have a look. They're quite good, actually. Not as good as us, though.
Now, is that going to be a problem for you when you guys do more global reach, I guess?
I don't know if you remember, back in the 90s, there were a couple of British indie bands, one called...
The Charlatans.
Yeah, there was the Charlatans, but there was also Verve, who had to change their name to The Verve because of Verve Records, and there was Suede, who I think are distributed as London Suede in America. So we put the UK after our name, so we're The Telephones UK, but obviously locally we just call ourselves The Telephones.
All right, so. That sounds good. And you are right about Suede. In fact, actually, the lady got the lady in America who's known as Suede sued the London Suede, and so now in America they're only known as this London Suede. Everywhere else, they're just Suede.
I mean, I think, you know, if it came down to us starting to get some offered some big gigs or some record deals or something like that, then, you know, we might have to look into the legal issues. We've kind of covered ourselves by registering the name in Britain, so, you know, as far as we're concerned, we're covered at the moment, and that's the way it is.
All know each other?
I met Andy Richardson through a friend of mine I used to know back in the old army days, and I just met Andy through that, and he was playing the guitar. He was a songwriter. I used to go and watch his band a few times, and I was learning to play guitar. Our paths actually crossed a few times. We got together and did some bits and bobs, like acoustically folk style singing and stuff, but never actually got it to a gigging stage. And then time went on, and shifting up a few years. We actually met up again in 2006, and Andy approached me to help him out with the telephones and bring the project to life. So that's what I've been doing for the last couple of years. So that's it. Basically, we've been friends for since 1994, 95, something like that, and it's still, you know, it's like a real close relationship sort of thing, you know, like a, I don't know, like you could do, well, we don't sleep together, shut up. We're like a Lennon McCartney type of, you know, like kind of songwriting kind of thing. Yeah, Morecambe and Wise type of thing, yeah. That's it, basically. And then we used to go around doing a lot of acoustic sets and stuff, doing residential stuff around Derby, just to get the name known. And then we decided to branch out into getting a full band on board, which would be the case. We got the drummer, Matt, who's been drumming with us for the last 2 years. And our Gaz, the bass player, is just, I found Gaz hanging around in a nightclub. So someone put me on to him saying he can play bass, and that's it. It's been all downhill from there.
Hey, Dave, do you have any questions for the telephones?
Yeah, if I'm in England in the next few weeks or month, where are you guys playing at?
Well, if you come over to England, we're actually playing the Blessington Carriage on Thursday night. We're doing an acoustic set in Derbyshire. Basically, we've actually got the MySpace page, which is, let's have a look, it's myspace.com/thetelephonesuk. You'll be able to see all our gig listings on there, photos, so you can see how we all are. It's got a couple of cuts from our forthcoming mini album that's due to be released in October. That's it, basically. You can,
what's the name of the album? Do you guys have a name? Did you guys have a name for the album yet?
Yeah, we started recording in March, and we had a session booked for a week. Well, there were some technical problems. It was a brand new studio, and the engineer had a few problems, and we ended up just recording 8 songs. So I guess you'd call it a mini album. When we put the songs together in a certain order, they seemed to make sense, and we've ended up calling the mini album The Bridge.
Yeah, what's the bridge name?
Yeah, well, The Bridge, I mean, it's a common name in England for a pub. Okay, there's lots of pubs usually situated next to bridges. And you know, part of British culture is a pub culture. You know, whether you live in a town, a city, or whether you live in the countryside, you know, often the sort of one of the main parts of the community is and social life is around the pub. And the album is really about relationships. It's about relationships, but the two things. Seem to be two or three themes seem to be recurring through the album, and one is people moving from one place to another, either physically or emotionally, and the other theme is about the bridge between, say, youth and adulthood, because we're all of that age now where we're sort of hitting our sort of 30s and 40s, and so we're having to take on responsibility. And it's, you know, it's a tough time. You know, a couple of us have got children now. Well, three of us, and all of us starting to own houses. But at the same time, we still want to have a social life. We still want to go out and have a good time sometimes. So, you know, that puts pressure on relationships. So there you go. The other thing in the imagery from the album is,
it looks like a peace sign.
Oh, the peace sign. Yeah, I mean, that kind of harks back to. That harks back to some of the influences of the band, really. Perhaps, you know, late 60s Woodstock era kind of bands, and a lot of British, which is the, you know, it's also the CND sign, Greenham Common in Britain, and I guess lots of different places in America. But, you know, yeah, I guess for us it represents, you've got the CND sign, and you've got the Woodstock bird, and they're kind of, and then yeah, so it's that sort of imagery from the 60s, and it kind of, like, it's a little nod towards who we might be influenced by.
I have a couple more questions. We don't have to go over them, but I thought they were kind of interesting, because I do realize that now versus 10 years ago, How is it different recording and you know editing your own music? Do you have? I know you guys have a studio. You guys use?
We've been using a friend's studio. She's actually an engineer, trained engineer, and she's really good at what she does. Although we do have a portable studio, and like you say, these days, a lot of people can make fantastic sounding music in their bedrooms, quite easily. We don't do that. We tend to go into a studio and record, mic up the amplifiers, mic up the acoustic guitars, and use good microphones. And so we tend to go into this studio, though we have done demos on PCs and laptops and that sort of thing.
Ask Gary a question because we haven't heard from him. What song, Gary, do you like playing on the telephone?
Do I like playing?
Yeah,
the
easiest?
I like listening to all of them. I like playing all of them. They're fantastic. I got very lucky. I kind of joined a band that was pretty much there. Raising the Blazes is probably my favourite song. I like the story that it tells. I'm just harking back to what Andy was saying about how pub culture in Britain is very much part of British society. And I don't just mean from a drinking perspective, but a pub often is a place that's a bridge in itself where things change and things happen. I mean, it was a kind of pub where I met Jay. So, yeah, all the songs. I love all the songs. Freaking out on stage to Graceless Bird with Jay at the end of the song is just awesome. But as far as the question goes, yeah, I'd say Raising the Blazes is my favourite song to listen to. Okay?
Thank you. Have you guys thought about hiring some kind of like public relationship company, like a PR company, to get promotion, or are you guys pretty much guerrilla DIY promotion as far as trying to get your music out?
I don't think we're guerrilla anything, DIY otherwise. Certainly we're a bit hairy, some of us, but we're not guerrilla anything. We kind of word of mouth at the moment, and the internet, and telling friends, and you know, it's all network. It's all about meeting people. Really.
Is it all about people you know?
Not all people we know. No, we have people come to us who we don't know initially, but most people like us become certainly friends, if not more than just the occasional acquaintance at times.
So tell us some about some of your influence and what you guys are listening to at the moment, and you can pass the mic around.
Yeah, it's Andy. Yeah, I've got a real mixture of influences. I'd say from 60s British 60s music, like Small Faces, The Beatles, The Kinks, The Who, through to British folk from the 70s, John Mine, Nick Drake, and the people that inspired them, over to the West Coast of America for bands like Love, The Birds. Dylan's a huge influence, as is Neil Young. There's some of my influences. I'll pass you over to Jay for some of his.
Right, my influences are like basically what Andy's been putting on, getting me into the last 2 years or so, but ever since on the massive law Into the Laws, the Liverpool band. Works of John Power, who used to be in the Lars. We've actually supported him on a date or so. Just like Beatles, The Birds, just like typically decent, good guitar music, anything that's well played, we all pick up on and try and project that into the songs and the energy and all that kind of stuff. Anything like modern wise, we're just like we're all open to listening to newer stuff, but it just like we always seem to be going back to the old, you know, like the traditional way of music, the way it's been played and stuff, and we try and emulate that kind of thing to put our own brand into the music.
Can I ask Dave a question?
Yeah.
Dave, you say you're interested in jazz music.
I have been, yes.
I'm kind of interested in where jazz has blended with say like folk and blues. Yeah, I suppose people like John Martin, even Joni Mitchell have seemed to have dabbled in jazz. And although I don't know a heck of a lot about jazz, to be honest. I've listened to obviously a little bit of Coltrane and Miles, but could you?
Well, interesting. Interestingly enough, Herbie Hancock, his latest album was dedicated to Joni Mitchell, and he basically played a lot of her songs, and it's called Herbie Hancock River, the Joni Letters, and he played, reinterpreted a lot of her songs and actually brought in a lot of people to be on his album, including Norah Jones, Tina Turner, Joni Mitchell actually too, and surprisingly, Leonard Cohen too is on there. So what made it kind of interesting is he actually won the Grammy for Best Album of the Year just recently. So maybe one of the first times in a while that a jazz album actually maybe won that, because usually they kind of gear themselves more towards pop and more prominent records like that. So yeah, I would say if you can check it out, the Herbie Hancock River would be a pretty nice blending of that folk music, and they basically dedicate a whole album to Joni Mitchell. So that was the album that won this year even too. So and it's kind of a nice album just to listen to over and over again too. So and just to give you guys a heads up too, when it comes to your album The Bridge, jazz saxophonist Sonny Rollins actually has an album named The Bridge too, and the reason why he named it The Bridge is because he went on sabbatical for about, I think, 8 months or something like that, and he spent the whole time playing on a bridge in New York City all by himself in the middle of the night because he was living in an apartment, and his wife and neighbors didn't appreciate him practicing all the time, so he actually would just go out on this bridge and play the whole time. When I heard you guys say The Bridge, I just wanted to give you a heads up and say, that's a great name. I love that name for an album, so I'm going to go check that album out. So
thanks for that, Dave. Thanks. Cool.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm going to check out the Herbie Hancock. So I've heard quite a bit of his early stuff with the Headhunters, but I'll have a listen to that, especially with the crossover stuff with Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, and he brings a lot of it's a pretty good album.
The big man arrives, disco dancers greet him, plain clothes cops greet him, small town big man, fresh lipstick listening.
I was just going to say that with our music we keep it fairly 4/4 in terms of songwriting, you know, generally, but there are songs on the album where it doesn't have a traditional structure in terms of like verse, chorus, verse. You know, most of the songs have had quite a bit of thought put into them in terms of that the structures and the changes in the keys, etc. It's subtle, but it's there. You can hear it. You know, this. I think what we try to do is keep it down to a so that the essence of the song shone through. So you've just got very much live instruments, voice, acoustic, bass, drums, guitars, and then, you know, but if you listen to it two or three times, the final mixes, which aren't not available yet, they should be next week, but when the album's out, it should be one of those albums that you can go back to in 10 years' time, and it's not going to sound dated because we've used, you know, authentic instrumentation. We've not gone mad with any kind of technology that we know nothing about. And you know, I completely admire these people that go out and play standing on a bridge all day every day, because they're real musicians to me. You know, obviously this is only my interpretation of it, but we sort of hark back to that lineage of musicians who do it live and then go and record what we do live, you know. So we have to sort of really think about what we're going to do live. So we went into the studio and all these songs were already written. It's not everyone's way of doing it, but it's our way of doing it. Okay.
Can I just add something there? I just want to say that although the songs are recorded, and you will hear them hopefully as the bridge, it's actually awesome to come to a band and find that they've got songs that can be reinterpreted in any way, shape or form. I mean, I find I've got friends who've heard us play and I hear them play kind of cover versions of the band that I'm in songs, which is amazing. The songs are good enough to stand up to jazz type reinterpretations, I would say, and any kind of reinterpretations. You know, it would be interesting to hear what people come up with. But I mean, just going back to the jazz thing, I mean, in this country we had a problem for years with things like trad jazz and other different skills. As with most things in this country, things get kind of splintered. But the thing about the telephone sound is that there's a telephone sound on the album that just completely encapsulates everything that Andy was saying and Jay was saying earlier about the bands that influences. Okay, I just wanted to sort of chip in there.
All right, that should wrap it up for the telephones. Thank you guys for hanging in there and talking to us a little bit about your music and album.
Thanks, guys. That was awesome. Hopefully, good luck with the album.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Vu. Yeah, thanks for your help, mate.
Yeah, thanks, Vu. That's brilliant.
Yeah, much appreciate that. Thank you.
She says he's been gone for ages, raising blazers with his mates at the bridge or the crown. At the chime, he's in his prime. There's beggars and buskers, laughter and blushes. Eyes down, can't take it, wake it well. Out crumble, honesty, yeah. Who knows which way she goes? Is it up with the clouds or over the waves? Every spring he remembers the thing that it's lost in the hour. Steps from the shower. She knows nothing else goes, nothing else moves or sticks in the grooves. Eyes down, can't take it, waiting frown. Out crumble, honesty, yeah. Who knows which way she blows? Is it up with the clouds or over the waves?
Hey, actually, if you guys want to stick around, we're just going to talk about gasoline prices affecting the U.S. economy.
Yeah, we got him on one now. You'll have him on a roll. You'll not get rid. Yeah, we'll stick around, brother. Don't worry.
You guys have to leave, or do you want to stay?
No,
around?
We ain't got any petrol anymore. We've got to stay here.
Tandem with three seats to get everywhere to gigs.
And his pogo stick's got a flat tire, so we're just going to have to stay here till he gets fixed.
So the first topic I have here is P. Diddley. He stopped using his private jet because the fuel costs are so high that he's now taking commercial flights. Is the economy this bad that Puff Daddy has to fly commercial?
Well, my view on it, I've been reading into it this morning, it can't be anything to do with it. It must be his record sales are falling and he can't afford it. Yeah, it's carbon footprint. More like Sasquatch.
Yeah, totally.
Dave, what are your thoughts on this?
I don't really feel bad for him, I guess. Although, I think we've all been there where it'd be nice to have access to a private plane, you know, because of the ability to get from here and there. Well, here in Minnesota, it's all about the boats and, like, how it costs so much just to fill up a boat. And then all these people, instead of actually taking the boat on the lake, just sit on the dock because they can't afford to take it out.
You know what? Although we can laugh about it, this is actually a bad sign, I think, because... you have, like, indie bands who make most of their money going on tour in vans and going from town to town. And every night that they play, they make enough money for basically gas money to make it to the next town. And this is a really bad sign because apparently, like, a lot of indie bands are kind of like, well, we can't afford to go on tour this summer or so forth. And I don't know. I think it's bad for everybody, even Puff Daddy, so... And, you know, I don't really feel that bad about Puff Daddy just because, you know, he's like...
It must be nearly skinned.
We're going to convert all our entities from Puff Daddy Records.
Yeah, we're going to buy every CD and everything he's got. We're melting down so we can just fit him in and...
Yeah, I guess there's really not much to add to that. I just thought it was just a hilarious article that I saw across. I mean, concerning to music and stuff.
Yeah. That was a better topic anyway compared to some that's been out this last week in the music.
Yeah, what's going on over there?
In what respect? I mean, the whole world's going mad now. Yeah. I don't know, all sorts of headlines. I don't really take much notice of them, to be honest with you. I think the big thing is like when Gary Glitter come out of prison and he's just come back over here.
you know what's really funny is you guys, your music coverage over in England is very different from America. And I always find that really fascinating. You guys are really into like the new Oasis album that just came out. Everybody's talking about it over there. Over in America, like people are like, Oasis who?
Yeah, well, if you've got a copy, send us one over, because it's not due to release till October.
I can get it if I have a lot of contacts that I can probably pull some strings if you really want it.
Well, Noel Gallagher's just walked in anyway.
Yeah, he can't afford the gas prices, so he's walking to across there.
Yeah, he's just coming on his helicopter.
But, yeah, so I always find that's actually really fascinating.
I wear the telephone. Nah, we'll scrap that one. Use the first one we did.
All right, wear the telephones, and you're listening to We Heart Music Radio.
Yeah, that's a proper Yorkshire accent, that.
Did you pick that up, Paul?
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah, what is it?
You were saying about the American music scene. I mean, over there you've got like different radio stations for different categories of music. Is that right?
Yeah, it's pretty much all owned by Disney Radio, and so they we have like a lot of pop contemporary to country music. It's still popular, and I mean,
what about what about hip hop and?
Oh yeah, that's huge. Yeah, I mean, every major city has its own hip hop station. It's all very regional, but at the same time, it's also very because they're all owned by pretty much one entity, that they determine what gets on the radio, which is, I mean, there's just a ton of different genre music, but a lot of it's not that good, in my opinion, anyway.
I hear you're you like some British bands like you like Morrissey and maybe Smash and some other sort of sleeper.
Yeah.
That's right. You like, so you kind of influenced, but is that kind of music? Are there radio stations where you can access sort of the indie music, British indie music, and that sort of thing in America?
No, I can tell you that when I first started in my career as a music listener is in 1993, I was volunteering for a radio station on KFSR 90.7 in the San Joaquin Valley, and we didn't have a lot of coverage on British music, so anytime that I get anything from the UK, which is including, you know, Smash, Sleeper, Blur, Oasis, before they got huge, and I would use those music to play on my radio show, which is basically all British music, and I don't think there's by the time Britpop really exploded in like 94, 95. Basically, I was really into Britpop, and that really helped that they had such a massive explosion. That's pretty much it. But I used to be a radio DJ, so it's kind of... I got a lot of stuff that I don't think a lot of normal people really had access to, so it was kind of cool.
It must be... I mean, I can only liken you hearing Britpop music to us hearing maybe Wilco or Pavement or, you know, sort of American indie bands, maybe The Strokes or something, and then...
Are those bands really popular over there?
Sorry?
Are those bands really popular over in Brooklyn?
The Strokes were massively popular when they first came out. Pavement, I saw Pavement in about 92 in a small club in Derby, and that was with their first album. That was an amazing gig. I think like you'll be aware of music weeklies. There used to be three music weeklies in Britain, but now there's only the NME.
Yeah, there used to be Melody Maker, and what else was the other weekly?
Record Mirror.
Oh, yeah. Or did they all get bought up by IPC, or who's the company that owns all that now?
IPC own most of the music magazines. Certainly they own the NME, Uncut magazine, maybe
Q Mojo. Magazine, right?
It may be Q, yeah, it could be Q as well, yeah, yeah. So they've got a big chunk of the media concerned with music, yeah.
You know, so what I really miss is, do you remember a magazine called Raw Magazine?
Yeah, I did. I had a few. I bought the copy with the Stone Roses because a big influence of mine at the time were the Stone Roses, and they had a really good interview with. Yeah, it was a good magazine. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff that aren't being published anymore, and I think there's a magazine called Vox Magazine as well that came out from England.
Vox, yeah. I used to get that. I used to get Vox, and what was the other one? Select.
Oh, I love Select. I think during their heyday, like, they were the one that broke Britpop, I think, with Brett Anderson on the cover of the magazine saying, "You Yanks, go home!"
Yeah, that's right, with his Union Jack flag wrapped around him. Yeah, right, I remember right. that. I remember
and
that.
That was, like, in 92, so that was really, really early on. And then they had interviews with Luke Haynes from the Auteurs. Do you remember the Auteurs?
Oh man, I love their early work. You know, the first album, and then, you know, up into
New Wave. Well, New Wave, I think, was the name of the album, and it's a really good album.
One of my favourite songs of all time is Showgirl. What we're thinking of, what we're going to talk about after this interview as well is doing some maybe sleeve notes and photographs and that sort of thing as well that we can send out as a package, as like a promo pack, which we'll definitely be sending you guys.
Oh yeah, thanks. Are you guys interested in vinyl at all? Because that's making a huge comeback here in the States here.
Yeah, I'll put Gary on because he's a vinyl junkie. Here's Gary.
I've got a garage full of records. They're not all garage records either. Vinyl's just, to me, the only really way to listen to music is on vinyl. It's got that warmth, it's got that feel. It's not got that kind of artificial feel and sound to it that digital music has. And certainly, to put something out on vinyl, I mean, we haven't really talked about this as a band, but certainly we all like the kind of music that sounded so great on vinyl back in the day. When you couldn't get anything but vinyl, you know. I mean, to me, music comes in one format. It's black and it's got a hole in the middle.
You know what? Vinyl sounds, I think, sounds a lot better than digital.
Oh, by a long way. A long, long way. I mean, the first Paul Weller solo album, which is called Paul Weller, you know, so influenced seemingly is he by the whole vinyl thing, that there's actually, it sounds like the halfway through the album, it sounds like it's been turned over. You know, there's a crackle and hiss and the pop and the needle comes out of the groove. But certainly, as far as we're concerned, you know, we all would probably hark back to a day when vinyl was the only way.
Yeah, is that the album with the Changing Man on it, or?
No, it's before that. It's the one with Clues on it and Into Tomorrow and Bubba Clouds.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
I mean, the British. I don't know about the American. Yeah, 1973. It's the first thing he did after the Star Council. But I mean, again, you know, the whole kind of. I mean, Jay and I are both influenced by the modernist thing. Which is it was massive over here, a big sort of cult in the 60s and certainly died out in the 70s, but we were both just looking at pictures of each of the scooters before we were talking to you, and all the clubs that you go to, they play vinyl. You know, it's very vinyl, it's play CD, it's just uncool. So you know, we're very 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 vinyl. Certainly I am anyway. I can't speak for the guys, but I think they are.
I sold my vinyl collection to buy trainers and clothes when I was about 15 because I thought it would get me more girlfriends, which in hindsight which was a bad move, but you know, I totally embraced the vinyl culture, and I just like holding an album, you know, and looking at the artwork and looking at the sleeve notes and looking at, and you know, that's what we're all about, you know.
I don't know if you're aware, but modern people who listen to music, they don't buy music physically. It's all about their MP3s, and I think
I don't get that at all. I don't get that. I mean, it's like you were saying about the Disney Corporation, you know, buying up the airwaves. To me, it's almost like you've got this thing that's an intangible thing that you own and you paid for, but you've got no way of picking up and showing it to your friends. You know, you what do? You get your telephone, your mobile, like your pocket, and play them a bit of a tune. That's just not the way that music should sound and does sound in my world.
I know. That's
certainly, MP3s alien to. Although it works great. I mean, as a device for disseminating your sound and what you're about, you know, certainly can't knock the whole internet revolution, really.
Well, I mean, I think it's good as a kind of like a radio device where you're kind of giving that to fans to kind of listen to get a sense of what you sound like. And if they, you know, like it, they should buy the CD, because I still like physically touching my music for, you know, it sounds...
Yeah, I agree. Well, that's exactly what I was trying to say. I think you put it far more succinctly there. Thank you.
Yeah, and anyway, but you know, with records though, did you know? Do you guys always get some records where you're looking at like the liner, like the etching? They sometimes have little messages in the grooves.
The run-out groove. Yeah. Well, I mean, things like Stiff Records, you know, Porky Prime Cuts. There was a guy at the plant there who used to put little messages at the end of each track, and we well, certainly I used to work in records, so I'm so sad I can tell you catalog numbers of various releases. It's sad, really. It just shows that we, you know, we're so into music, we'll spend our time even reading it if it says anything on the run-out group. Obsessives.
No, that's what I love about records. I'll buy a record and I'll try to find if there's a secret message in them, and I'll look and look. And sometimes a lot of times they don't have any messages, but the one that do is kind of like it's kind of good.
The records backwards. They say the telephones are fantastic.
Yeah, and you play, turn them over, and they go, what, that kind of thing. That's just Jay's got a bit of guitar. Yeah, the Smiths did all that kind of thing as well, didn't they, on their singles, on the 7-inches and stuff.
Yeah, Morrissey is like notorious for like cracking the whip to get that done, because I think it's very time-consuming, because somebody has to sit there and basically handwrite your messages on there. And, you know, and... granted, it was maybe a limited press run of like say 500 to 1,000, but once it gets more than 1,000, I can't imagine the guy doing the hand messages was gonna like Morrissey after that.
Yeah, I think he stopped touring for a bit because he got writer's cramp.
Is Morrissey still big over in the UK, or is
his arms are?
Did you know he was Warner DVD was releasing a recent concert of his? They were gonna release in October.
Is this something that he's not happy about?
No, he's not happy at all. He wrote this like.
Happy. Morrissey, it's like a job description to
me. We can't hear you.
For Morrissey, not being happy is kind of like a job description. Which is good, yeah. I mean, Northern guys are miserable, you know, they all go together.
Yeah, that's Morrissey, unhappy ever after. But yeah, it's he basically had Warner DVD stop selling or promoting the record because he was like, I'm not signed to Warner, I don't understand this, and they didn't get my permission, and you know, he's...
agree with him totally. I mean, the thing is that if you go back maybe 10, 12 years, George Michael was in a similar position, and he tried to do the same thing with Sony, and I agree completely, you know. I mean, again,
was Sony releasing a lot of his music without his permission?
How work it, you know, then you find yourself working for a corporation, but you signed to a label, and the label wasn't part of that corporation when he signed.
Oh, right, because Sony bought up the catalog, right? Is it Columbia House or Columbia that owned his?
Columbia back then, yeah. I mean, when you're talking about
getting, you know, the music business, it. I mean, the more I look into it, the more wary I am, and as we get older, so many people over history have been ripped off to. And messed about and tied up in knots by the music business. So many of our favourite bands, and it can happen to any kind of business, but in the music business, it seems to be prevalent, you know. And historically, I mean, you think about all the Motown session musicians who never got a penny, you know, and who came up with the signature motif riffs for some of the most popular songs ever played, and they don't get a penny for it, and you know, the Funk Brothers and
No, you're totally right, actually, because I know a lot of, famous Motown singer now don't have a penny. They're, like, broke, basically, and a lot of them died penniless, and they're, like, these... They wrote some of the most massive hits from, like, the 60s and 70s that they never got a penny from that, and I thought that's really sad in some way, because...
That's good, yeah.
And you have to understand that the music industry treat black Americans like crap. Like, they didn't have any rights. I don't know if you
yeah. Especially. Yeah, I mean, yeah. there was a good film out a couple of years ago called Standing in the Shadows of Motown, which was basically all about people like James Jameson and all the guitarists working for Motown Records, and they were basically, it was their sound on the records. They didn't write the original songs, but as you can have a song, a melody, and a chord structure, but how it's embellished, how it's played,
how it's interpreted
can make a massive difference. And some of them, the level of musicianship was incredible. These guys went out on tour, they got paid a pittance, a recent example of people getting stitched up in the music business is naively Richard Ashcroft of
Verb.
The Verb. No, that song Bittersweet Symphony. The Verb, yeah?
Yeah,
you know the song?
Bittersweet Symphony.
Bittersweet Symphony, yeah. And he borrowed the strings section from Andrew Luke Oldham's interpretation of the Rolling Stones. And so they... Oh, right, Gary knows more about it than me. Yeah, it was an interpretation of an interpreter. But essentially they didn't make a penny from that song, really.
Going back to do you remember Smash at all? Did you like Smash?
I remember Smash. I saw Smash and the bass player actually cut his finger at a gig in Derby at the Warehouse, and there was blood everywhere. It was quite quite a big feature in either Melody Maker or NME at the time. And yeah, I thought they were an amazing band, Smash and These Animal Men, who Jay absolutely adores. They were both really, really good bands at the time, when the innocence of the beginning of Britpop, and they came through full force, and it was a good time in British sort of
Salvador cut his finger?
Yeah, he cut his finger at a gig in Derby at the Warehouse.
How did that happen?
He was just thrashing away on his bass, and I think he hit one of the pickups or something, or he hit the bridge on the bottom of the bass, and he cut his finger, and there was blood everywhere. But he didn't stop the gig. I think he just stuck a plaster on it, stuck a Band-Aid on it, and carried on the gig, and it was pretty intense gig. Yeah, they were a good band, really, really good band. And
that sounds tough, man. Yeah, to me, like, I get a mosquito bite, and I'll forget it, call off the gig.
Back to where my friend died, not the scene of his ugly.
side, but to where he used to live, just to have him by. Anything I would give. It must have taken years for the pain inside. I could have helped him if I tried. I could have saved somebody's life. This has happened to me before. I love my friends to come knocking at my door. All I wanted was company. I should have been pleased. The friend they chose was me. Why am I so blind that I cannot see? Why am I so blind I cannot see? When people need, they need me. When I should have shown sensitivity. When I should have shown sensitivity. Suicide's not painless. Back to where my friend died. Now the scene of his ugliest suicide. But to where he used to live, just to have him back. Anything I would give. And it must have taken years for the pain inside. And I could have helped him if I tried. I could have saved somebody's life. Could have helped him. If I tried, could have saved somebody's life. Suicide's not painless. This has happened to me before. I love my friends to come knocking at my door. All I wanted was company. I should have been pleased. The friend they chose was me. Why am I so blind that I cannot see? Why am I so blind? People need, they need me. When I should have shown sensitivity. When I should have shown sensitivity.
Hello, Rudy.
Hello, Rudy.
Hello, Rudy.
How are you doing that effect?
I'm running it through my Line 6 guitar tone port thing, so I've got loads of effects, like
I've got distortion
and I've got a wah-wah.
Wow, that's
I've got delay, compression, reverb.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're actually outside in a cave. Now we're back in the front the side room.